Welcome to the Heart for God podcast. With many years of experience pastoring and helping to start churches, Dr. Jim Townsley has some practical and biblical advice that can be a great help to you and your ministry. On this podcast, Dr. Townsley and other guests with special expertise cover a variety of topics. His goal is to help you lead your church to be a healthy, strong, and balanced ministry, and for your family to be happy, healthy, and living for the Lord.
I've taken more time than I wanted to, so I'm going to stop at that level, and we'll see if we have any other questions. So we're going to get a microphone. We can pass it around. So if anybody has a comment, a suggestion, or question, I wish I had more time to cover all these other areas, but I thought these at least would be the most helpful to us. Anybody have a comment, question, something to add? Other thoughts, ideas? Okay, right here in the back. Just give your name, your church.
Zach Kinsman, New Heights Baptist Church in Newtown. Two questions for you, Pastor Townsley. One, how often do you send mailers out or booklets to a town? So say Southington, once a year, twice a year, how much is too much? You know what I mean? Where you're not bombarding people. And two, if you could, I guess in a condensed format, share your follow-up process for first-time visitors.
Okay, the first one's, we've been 3 years and we kept going to new places, so we've not sent anything again to Southington, which was our first town to send things out to. But we have a different book, which I think would be profitable to send out another one. And, you know, you can may have your own book or you write something. Is it something different you want to send out? But, yeah, I think maybe every 3 years or so. And it is helpful that my name was on it because I'd meet people in town know who I am. And I would meet them in the grocery store and they would say, oh, I got your book. Thank you for sending that out. I appreciate that. I'm going to read it. Whether they read it or not, I don't know. But there's a stronger connection within your community, especially if you've been there a long time. So there, but I think probably about 3 years would, you could probably do another mailing with a different book, not the same one. As far as the follow-up is concerned, it, for us, it's a difficult thing to get people to fill out a visitor card. They don't want to give their information. And they don't, we find out who they are and find their address. We visit them, they stop coming. They don't want you to visit in their home. And very often, I'll just say, hey, why don't we meet my office? Or let's go somewhere, I'll meet you for lunch and meet them that way. But more than anything, our staff follows up people, but the people in the church that are key people give us information that they find out about visitors so that we can follow them up. Now, if somebody's visiting from out of state and they're a member of a good church, well, they fill out a visitor card, but that's not who we're looking for. We're looking for people from our community. So you have to, you know, there's a sweet spot where you're not prying, you don't make them feel uncomfortable, but yet you're trying to get some information, and it may take a few weeks. We had a Catholic family. They were coming faithfully, and they would never give us their address. I mean, we could have been embarrassing them to get it, but we never got it. Finally, I found it online, did a search, and visited them, and, you know, they became very faithful. They later moved out of the area, but that it took a while. So I think persistence is really necessary, at least in our case. We're in a suburban area. Maybe in an urban area it would be a little different, but in a suburban area, which like you're in, sometimes people feel uncomfortable. They don't want someone visiting their home. So trying to set up a neutral site or even coming to the church. I mean, I had a Catholic couple 3 weeks ago. Somebody had been working on them, inviting them. They didn't necessarily want to visit in a home. I said, well, I'll meet you after church Sunday morning. I'll take the time. And they both got saved, and they're ready to get baptized. But it's a hard thing. Then the other thing is I'm writing, I'm doing a new Christian class. Now, there's a lot of material out there. There's a lot of discipleship material. Some of it is 10 or 12 weeks. Some of it's 3 months. Some of it's 2 years. And, you know, there's a variety of things that you can include in it. My idea is there are basic things that you need. So the first two lessons are totally on salvation and go into such detail so that they really understand what happens when you get saved. And then obviously church membership and baptism and, you know, on the list. But a 10-week course, which I'm going to put in a book, but we had like 22 in that class this Sunday morning. So there are a lot of people needed it. There are a couple people, they've been saved a long time, but they've never really been grounded very well. So I think that's important. And it doesn't have to run every month necessarily, but probably spring and fall, or as needed, to have some kind of system where you can get people on a basic foundation of Christian doctrine and Christian church practices. So if that answers the question. I don't know if I had a good answer, but it's a challenge for all of us. All right, anyone else have a comment or a question? All the way up here in the front. Belushi.
My name is Belushi Prevalon. I'm a student here at NEBC. And I know you didn't get to it, but you are going to, most likely, I'm assuming, we're going to give any tips on, you know, well, I guess this is in regards to, you know, taking your church to the next level. You know, your evaluation of churches and what you've seen. From my experience, what I've seen is, you know, one of the greatest things that that I've seen done here is the God and Country Day thing, where you like invited all the civic leaders and they came here, and they actually, you know, from the response that they gave was, you know, they felt like they were, you know, we cared for them. We wanted them to be here. We were behind them in what they're doing. What I've seen in my experience personally is that, you know, most churches, you know, whether it's big or small, you know, don't kind of concentrate on that group of people. And they're regular people. I mean, the other day I gave, you know, the mayor of West Hartford a ride in the Uber. And she's just a regular woman, you know. And, you know, what do you think, you know, we should do in terms of, you know, emphasizing, you know, reaching out to our civic leaders whom we're commanded to pray for and have a relationship with? Because if we don't, you know, false religion, they seem more appealing to them because they're constantly, you know, inviting them and befriending them and things like that. What are you?
Sure, those are very important things. There are two things that are the greatest draw in our churches. One is children, and anytime the children have a program or do anything, that they bring in parents, they bring in grandparents. Really, our church was started with teens, but they have parents. And that's where we got the parents, because we had activities for teens. And I was only 21 years old when we started, so, you know, I wasn't that far removed from being a teenager. But the other one is food, having special things. And we had a chili cook-off, and Mission Barbecue actually asked to come, and they prepared some chili, and they had like 4 or 5 people here, you know, and volunteered all of it. And they were all excited about it. But imagine if you went to a little country church and there's no plan, there's nothing going on, and it's drudgery. You just go to a service and it's over. And there ought to be something going on. There's always the next thing. So you need some activity. One of the best, I think, after children and food, maybe that we've ever done, was this God and Country Day. Now, the 9/11, emergency workers, police, fire, they've been honored a lot. But our elected local officials, the water board, the town council, the community leaders that are not paid, it's volunteer position, but they're elected, we invited them to come. And it was the best day that we've ever had. It was a terrific day because they're never honored. We did ask our state legislator to come and state senator, which they came. In fact, one of the ladies came, was like an arch enemy, and she came and just loved it, and, you know, Catholic person. The leading Democrat on the town council came, and he went back to the town council meeting and for whatever reason brought it up. He said, I was at this meeting at this church and started talking about the town council meeting, which is videoed and people watch the video of the town council meetings. And he was a Democrat. So that was a great thing. Now, we have people we've worked on for years and years in political positions. And I think it's an important thing for your church, and you may get people saved. We have a town council chairman that comes. We've had a close relationship for years, and she's gone through a transition, and most Sunday nights she's here, and she's come for many, many special events through the years. So I think it's a great thing to reach out. Even, I say this with advice, be careful, but even if you were part of the Republican town committee, you know that you meet the people that really run your town. I mean, it's an eye-opener. And I tell you, politics is a dirty business, and you see how the world operates, even the most conservative people. It's not by the Bible. But it gives you some contact with people that are really running your town, your community. So that's another possible outreach. And that's a long-term thing. When we first came to town, somebody suggested, well, go to your town hall and meet people in the different departments, which I did. It was great advice. I went to the town planner's office, and I said, hello, I'm Jim Townsley. I'm starting a church in town. He said, well, where is the church? I said, well, we don't have a church yet. Well, why'd you come in here? I said, well, I just wanted to meet you and let you know that at some point we're going to buy property and build a building, and I just want to know who you are. Oh, well, thank you for coming in. And ever so often, I go through the town hall, and I just meet those same people, the town manager, the assessor's office, I mean, town clerk, and I would just go through and meet people and talk to them, building department, and try to make friends with them. Later, when we bought this property, this 3 acres, the town planner did us a favor that I don't know that he's ever done anybody else in the world a favor. He did a favor because we had a relationship with him. Now, I never got saved, but, you know, it was an opportunity to witness to him and talk to them. You know, the president of the bank we went to, I sat and talked to him, witnessed him. I believe he got saved. He since is deceased, but he became a close friend and ally. And he convinced the rest of the finance committee of the bank to give us the loan to start with. So those are outreach things. At 2 o'clock, who are you going to visit in the afternoon? You can go to a business, a town office, and you can meet all these different people that gives you some kind of an outreach. But that God and Country Day was a terrific day because it was people that had never been honored, and that they were really psyched about it. And, you know, we put on a program and everything to go with it. So we're running out of time. We got about 5 or 7 minutes or so. Any other questions from anybody? Jason.
All right, so my name is Jason Lyons, and I am also a student at New England Baptist College. And since you started this ministry of going around to other churches and visiting churches and doing seeing how they operate and whatnot, what are some common things that you have found within the churches that might also be present within other churches that you could give some tips about?
So things that need attention?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The number one thing I found in every case so far, though I know it will not ultimately be in every case, but the pastor has no plan for retirement or investments. Now, if you're going to live on Social Security, can you live on $30,000 a year or $25,000 a year? And with the inflation going on, that's pretty hard to do. And do you want to take money out of the church so it takes away from the next pastor coming in? You know, they may need to do that, but planning ahead, you won't have to do that. So I think that's one thing that I see. I think we all have to work on organizational structure, and a lot of the churches I'm going to, that's one of their downfalls, and that's why they want me to come in. So I think the organizational structure of things, the protocols, things like that are not well organized. And the other thing is, we tend to get stuck. You reach a point and you think, this is it. You know, I can't go any further, I can't do any more, and we get stuck. And we need fresh ideas to get beyond that, to make the church stronger and healthier. And if the church is strong and healthy, all these other things fall in line. You know, you don't have to have a special day. It just, the church gets stronger and healthier, you reach more people. So I think those are the two things I've noticed more than anything. So, good question. Anybody else?
Okay. About the evaluation that you did at the church.
Give your name, too.
Doug Conley, First Baptist Church in Webster, Massachusetts. It's the oldest church in that area, and it's a historical landmark, basically. And it was valuable for you to come in because you had no vested interest with us. So people were looking at it objectively. When we met that night, the people got on board, got excited, and so we started implementing these changes. And again, in that kind of environment, you want to go slow. And so we just started implementing, but because you came in and did that, the people were more ready, more, I guess, open to that from an outside observer, seeing these things. And they all agreed that we all had blind spots, that we were not seeing these things because it was every day, day in, day out. And so just grateful for the fact that you came in with those eyes and saw what you saw and helped us through those things. And it was a tremendous blessing and help. And the changes still go on. So and you're seeing that. But yeah. I'm grateful for that.
Was it a year ago? When was I there?
A year ago.
About a year ago. So praise the Lord for that. There's one thing also I see consistently sort of going along with Jason's question that When I finish on Tuesday night, like the place I was at in this large church down in North Carolina, people were raising an eyebrow, like, what are you doing here? I mean, they were a much older congregation, and they were not interested in change of any kind. So they were really, you know, it was funny every time I would meet someone, they were like, who is this guy? What is he doing here? But in the end, every case so far, in the end, the pastor has been surprised that he had that much support there from the people once they had a plan and a goal. And I think that was the case there. The people were, I think you were a bit surprised that they wanted to do all the things they wanted to do. And that there are some things a pastor has a hard time saying. That's like planning for retirement. You know, that's an awkward thing. And the people feel awkward to say anything about it because they don't think it's their place, and somebody coming in outside can bring that together. You know, I just tell people I'm a church consultant. That's what I've done. I've 58 years of experience in ministry. You know, I must know something. You know, I think I know more than they know. So I think that helps someone from the outside to come in and say, look, you need a plan, long-term plan for your staff, your pastor, or whoever it is, to help with his retirement. I mean, I can say that. And the people in every case are, yeah, we want to do that. Yeah, we need, in one case, we need to buy the pastor a home and, you know, get him out of the church parsonage. And he couldn't say that, but I could say that. You know, it just depends on the situation. So I think all that, it's a great testimony, and it's been the same thing in the others that I've gone to, that it's sort of the same story. You know, it's no quick fix, but to be able to see things, have a vision, here's the plan, here's what we do. And I kind of leave it to the pastor to put an order of priority to different things. Yeah, we're just about out of time, and you got 1 minute. Any other questions? Titus?
I'm Titus Taylor. I'm a student here at NEBC. And my question is, how would, on the topic of your church evaluation, how would that be presented to the church that's being evaluated? Would the pastor just kind of spring it on the church, like, oh, there's this person that's just coming? Or would the church have to take a vote on it or something like that? How would that be
done? All right, that's a good question. Thus far, what's happened is people just contacted me, and they said they heard about what I was doing, and they said, I'd like for you to come, and the pastor sets up the meeting. He has at some point, he has to find people that are key people to have this meeting on Monday night. So he has to say something to those people. But otherwise, the church doesn't know, and I prefer it that way. I want to see it the way it normally is. So it's usually just up to the pastor, and he decides whether to come or not. Okay. Hopefully there's some thoughts and ideas. I wish we had more time to go through a long list of things.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, consider sharing it with a friend. You can also follow at Dr. Townsley on Twitter or on Facebook at Jim Townsley.